Here's a puzzle that should keep us up at night. Western nations have poured $2.3 trillion into foreign aid over 5 decades. That's enough money to buy every person in Africa a small house. Yet children still die from malaria because 12-cent medicines never reach them. Mothers still lose babies because $3 interventions aren't available. Something is profoundly, systematically broken, and it's not what you think. The problem isn't stingy donors or insufficient funds. It's that we've been asking the wrong question entirely. Instead of how can we help, we've been asking how can we fix them, a subtle but catastrophic difference that has shaped every failed intervention, every wasted billion, every preventable death. When your phone breaks, you replace it quickly. Now imagine getting that phone delivered through a committee of strangers in another country who've never met you, don't speak your language, and answer to 17 conflicting bosses. That's foreign aid. Planners announce grand intentions from Washington or Geneva, crafting 5-year strategies and glossy reports. They treat poverty as a technical problem, requiring expert solutions, with accountability measured by money spent and conferences held, not results for actual people. Searchers work at ground level, experiment constantly, and adapt to what works. Like entrepreneurs, they face immediate feedback. A shopkeeper stocking unwanted products goes bankrupt. A local NGO worker gets community pushback on failed programs. This brutal feedback loop drives continuous improvement. Harry Potter books reach readers worldwide within days, from Manhattan to rural India, without UN coordination. Publishers respond to demand because they profit from success and lose from failure. Yet we can't get $4 mosquito nets to families dying from malaria. Markets reward searchers who solve real problems. Aid bureaucracies reward planners who craft impressive strategies. For decades, a compelling story has driven trillions in aid spending. Poor countries need one massive push, a big bang of investment, to achieve self-sustaining growth. It sounds logical and appeals to our desire for dramatic solutions. It's also demonstrably wrong. Data from 137 countries, 1950 to 2001, reveals the poorest fifth increased income by essentially the same factor as wealthier countries. Countries receiving massive aid grew no faster than those receiving little. Meanwhile, Botswana, initially the fourth poorest country globally, increased income 13-fold through sound governance, not aid dependency. South Korea and Singapore achieved remarkable growth with minimal external assistance. Aid becomes counterproductive above 8% of GDP, creating dependency and undermining local capacity. Yet current proposals would push many countries to 20% or higher, well into harmful territory. Between 1970 and 1994, Africa received $342 billion in public investment, yet infrastructure deteriorated and productivity showed zero increase. Why does this myth persist? It flatters Western vanity. We want to believe we can transform societies with our expertise and money. Reality is messier. Development happens through gradual improvements driven by local knowledge, experimentation, and accountability. Exactly what aid bureaucracies short-circuit. Free markets work brilliantly, but you can't install them like software. Markets evolved over centuries through countless small adaptations, informal institutions, and social norms that can't be replicated through policy directives. Russia's shock therapy beginning January 1992 became the cautionary tale. Western economists promised enormous increases in living standards within a few years. Instead, hyperinflation hit 2,500% annually, state assets were looted, and oligarchs emerged. By 2004, per capita income remained 17% below 1989 levels, while poverty exploded from 2% to 40%. Why? Markets require invisible infrastructure that can't be imposed from above. Trust forms the foundation. In Denmark, 58% trust strangers. In the Philippines, only 5%. West African age groups and ethnic networks, Jews in pre-industrial Europe, Indians in East Africa, overseas Chinese in Southeast Asia, evolved organically to facilitate commerce where formal institutions were weak. Even property rights develop bottom-up. American frontier settlers created claim clubs and miners' codes long before formal laws existed. These informal systems worked because they reflected actual needs and relationships. Legal titling only makes sense when assets are valuable enough to justify administrative costs. Imagine you're a Tanzanian villager. Your road has potholes preventing crops from reaching market. In my Maryland suburb, I'd call Public Works and expect action within days. You face something different. Civil society representatives must communicate with government officials who solicit loans from the World Bank and IMF. This requires a poverty reduction strategy paper, country assistance strategy, pre-appraisal missions, and compliance with 17 different frameworks. By the time this labyrinth produces action, if it ever does, your crops have rotted. This isn't theoretical. Tanzania received $2 billion for roads over 20 years with no improvement. Countless agencies operate simultaneously: IMF, World Bank, USAID, DFID, dozens of NGOs, each with conflicting priorities. When everyone is responsible, nobody is responsible. Yet aid sometimes succeeds. The World Bank's Food for Education program doubled female enrollment in Bangladesh. Health interventions work because outcomes are specific and individually accountable. The tragedy is that we know what works. AIDS prevention through condom distribution costs $14 annually per person. Treatment costs $1,500. The WHO's planned $4.5 billion for AIDS treatment could save 5 to 60 times more lives through prevention. But comprehensive treatment plans get headlines and satisfy donor constituencies. Unglamorous prevention doesn't. Bureaucracies optimize for visibility rather than impact, and people die from preventable diseases. Japan's Akihabara district achieved an economic miracle without Western aid. Per capita income increased 32 times since 1870. China transformed from agricultural communes to specialized hubs like Sauk City, producing 9 billion pears annually, with industrial production exploding from 59 billion 1978 to 844 billion 2003. India's breakthrough came through entrepreneurs like Rajendra Power, franchising computer education, and Wipro pivoting from edible oils to IT services. When De Beers discovered diamonds in Botswana 1968, shrewd government negotiation secured partnership over nationalization, achieving the world's fastest growth rate over four decades, contrasting sharply with diamond-cursed Sierra Leone and Angola. These successes share a pattern: minimal aid, local ownership, diverse approaches. South Korea's government guided corporations. Hong Kong embraced laissez-faire. China blended dictatorship with markets. India maintained democracy. No grand blueprint imposed from abroad, just societies experimenting to find their own paths. What role remains for Western assistance? Mexican economist Santiago Levy created Progresa, providing cash grants to mothers who kept children in school, achieving 23% reduction in childhood illness and higher enrollment. Researchers like Esther Duflo studied individual interventions. Free breakfasts increased Kenyan preschool attendance 25%. Textbooks helped only top students. Flip charts proved ineffective. GlobalGiving.com created an eBay for aid, connecting social entrepreneurs directly with donors. Development vouchers given directly to the extreme poor could create market pressure, with agencies competing for vouchers based on effective services. We've spent a generation engineering societies from conference rooms, producing frameworks while children died from 12-cent medicines we never delivered. The planners failed because they asked the wrong question. The right question isn't how can we fix the world's problems, but how can we support people solving their own problems? This shift from savior to supporter, planner to searcher, requires abandoning our desire for dramatic transformation. Development happens through unglamorous, incremental improvements and accountability to the people we help rather than distant donors. The world's poorest don't need our blueprints. They need mosquito nets, clean water, basic medicines, and freedom to build their own futures. The most powerful force for development isn't foreign aid. It's human ingenuity unleashed, local knowledge respected, and communities empowered to solve their own problems. That's not retreat from helping. It's finally learning how.